Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 52. Dave, a nice day at Heinz Field. We've had some great weather to attend Steeler games this year, and I wouldn't say the Steelers played their most complete game of the season, but they certainly had their biggest quarter of the season, putting up 28 points on the Bengals, a big 35-7 win in the division. For me, that pretty much clinches their playoff spot. What were your initial thoughts?
I love the game. I think before we got on the air here, we said the first two drives kind of left a little bit to be desired there. You had a drop by Antonio Brown, and then Mike Wallace had one right in his hands that got jarred loose. But after that, man, it was all on. The Steelers really had good balance. They focused on the running game, which we'll get into, and they really executed well. And boy, once they got the initial block of the field goal by Cameron Hayward, that seemed to really spark everything, and they really played good from that point on. And you mentioned possibly looking real good for the playoffs. There's already three scenarios, if you can believe it, that the Steelers can clinch in this upcoming week 14. They can clinch at best the number six in the playoffs. And, of course, that all three scenarios involve them beating the Browns. All three scenarios involve the Texans beating the Bengals. And there's a mix and match of a couple games in between there of the three. But they definitely, what's funny is I don't think the Ravens can actually clinch a playoff spot this week, and the Steelers are one of very few in the AFC that can clinch. So great win yesterday, and ready to start talking about it.
Yep, there's a lot of stuff going on this week. As everybody probably knows, the Steelers have a short week. They'll be at Heinz Field, 8:20 kickoff against the Cleveland Browns Thursday. So Dave and I will have a little bit of a different format this week. We'll do obviously the game recap today. Wednesday we're looking to get one of the Browns beat writers on to preview the Browns himself, and then we'll do our preview of the game. And Friday, we'll come back with a recap of the game from Thursday night, and we'll give our picks for the week, and then that'll allow us to recap some more again on Monday. But that's our schedule. Dave, let's get into, obviously, with the short week, a change in the schedule for the Steelers as well. There won't be a lot of practice going on this week. As Mike Tomlin pointed out, guys who were down for the game yesterday are most likely, outside of Larry Foote, going to be down for the game this week if they were down because of injury. But let's why don't you review for us what he said in the presser in terms of the injuries. Fortunately, nothing too big, no surprises.
Yeah, no surprises. We'll definitely know when the first injury report comes out. I'm imagining that'll be some sort of preliminary report today, although I don't think they're practicing on the field today, but I think they still will release a projected injury report later today. We'll have to see if that gets posted later, and I'll have that up on SteelersDepot.com. Wide receiver, as you put it, Arnaz Battle and Chris Carter, both with hamstring injuries. Go ahead and roll those guys out right now. They're not going to play. Ramon Foster went down with that left ankle injury yesterday against the Bengals. Tomlin quite characterized him as questionable, but I've got to be honest with you. I really, really would be surprised if he plays. They can win this game without him. They need to get him back healthy. The ankle injury was enough to sideline him for the rest of the game, so I would expect him to be out as well. Chris Hoke and Jonathan Dwyer. Jonathan Dwyer evidently sustained evidently a foot injury in his limited action late in the game yesterday against the Bengals. Both he and Hoke are seeing the doctors today. Hoke has been practicing. He's not been showing up on the injury report, but evidently this is related to the neck stinger issue that he had. I believe he had like a regeneration problem on some of the nerves in the neck after suffering that stinger. I think it was against Jacksonville when he did that. And he's been down ever since. He's been inactive every week since that time, I believe. Lamar Woodley's the big name. Boy, David, I hate to say I'm right here, but I've been all over this Lamar Woodley, thinking that if this guy is not 100%, there is no way he should see the field. Hamstring injuries are tricky. They played him yesterday, and you could tell early on he was not 100% the way. He got pancaked on a running play down in the Steelers' red zone. Come to find out, that thing kind of tightened up on him there. You know, Tomlin tried to play it off that he didn't aggravate it or whatnot, that he's not ruled out of a Thursday night game, and they had a pitch count on him yesterday, yada, yada. I got to be honest, man, there's no reason to dress this guy Thursday night against the Browns. They don't need him in this game. They need to get the guy back healthy. And even if, it's spot duty going forward, all it takes is one play for him to re-aggravate that thing seriously, and you lose him for all the playoffs. So we'll watch him and see how much work he gets done leading up to this game. But, boy, I sure wish they wouldn't have played him. Larry Foote has a legitimate chance of playing this week against the Browns, according to Mike Tomlin. So we'll watch his participation leading up to this week. That'll be crucial if they can kind of get him back with both Chris Carter going to be down this week, because they're kind of thin, especially if Woodley was not to play at the linebacker position. So that's what we know right now. Mawaldi Moore was not mentioned today, although there was some talk that he might have dinged his ankle, I think, yesterday in that game. So we'll have to look for that on the injury report as well.
Yep, and we're not going to get too much into the Browns because that's mostly Wednesday's conversation, but Tomlin was in rare form today, Dave. It's clear that the Browns are also a favorite to win the Super Bowl, as have all 12 Steeler opponents been thus far. But a couple gems from the line. I know there's one that caught your eye. The one that I loved was the one at the very end when somebody asked about the shot Antonio Brown took at the very late in the game when Charlie Batch laid a pass down the right sideline. AB really took a shot to the chest and ribs. It got up rubbing his stomach, and the guys on the sidelines were really giving him hell for that later on, which was pretty hilarious. But I love Tomlin's lines of, it comes with the territory. Casey Hampton gets double teamed all the time. Wide receivers take hits. Any more questions?
He basically said, so be it.
So be it, exactly.
His other great line today, which, man, this guy, if this guy sits around and thinks these up, man, they're just great. But the line today, they're talking about Josh Cribbs, his role in the special teams, and we all know how Josh Cribbs has killed the Steelers over the years in the return duties. Thomas said that they had been dead Indians in his cowboy movie enough.
yep.
And boy, you could even hear the media in the room chuckle when he said that. So chalk one up to him. That far surpasses the grapes and the squashing and all like that. That's got to be the Tomlinism of the year right now.
Yeah, pretty good stuff. And we'll get into the Browns, as we talked about on Wednesday. Dave, the game yesterday, coming off the Kansas City game, you looked at this team, and they came out. They got the ball in the opening kickoff, and as you pointed out, and as I felt like at the game, a tough first 10 minutes of the game. What was interesting is, everybody said the Steelers wouldn't be able to run the ball on the Bengals, and it turns out that they ran the ball very effectively. But the second play of the game, you and I both talked about them wanting to get Mike Wallace involved early, and they threw a bubble screen out there to the left side. And I'm not sure who was out there with Wallace, but he missed the block, and everybody got tied up and tangled up, and Wallace ended up losing 3 yards on the play. And then you pointed out the drop by Antonio Brown, and I'd like to hear an explanation exactly on the play design there, because how that was run was Sanders was on the inside, and he goes upfield, and Brown cuts in behind him there, and Ben throws a ball that looks like could have been catchable by either guy, and I'm just wondering if Sanders didn't run the right route, or Brown saw a hot route that Ben saw, and somebody didn't do something right. But it looked to me, A, like you said, Brown should have caught the ball, and B, that the two receivers were too close together. Somebody didn't do something exactly right there.
I don't know. Somebody, of course, we'll never know 100% unless Tomlin tells us, but that could have been a rub route to try to rub off a defender.
But then you would think Sanders would have kept moving upfield. I didn't really get that. That's what surprised me.
Yeah, and it looked like really, the ball could have been probably maybe intended for either one of them, but we'll never know. But, I mean, let's face it, it looked like a design slant. It looked like Brown had the right route.
Yeah.
Sanders probably, you know, we'll have to go back and dissect it a little bit further. But, I mean, the ball hits you right in the hands. You know, the kid's got to make that catch. And if he catches that ball, you know, first down, move the sticks on the first drive, and you're off to a great start there. But it didn't go down that way. It was a 3rd-and-10 play, and they got a punt.
And we've seen it, you know, we've seen so often this year the Steelers be so effective on their opening drives. So coming off the Kansas City game, you see that. And then bang, right off the second play for Cincinnati after a nice punt by Kapanos and a nice return by Tate for the Bengals, we see them run this play to A.J. Green, where the Steelers ended up getting caught on some nice play action by the Bengals. I think they had a fake handoff and a reverse, both of which they faked an end around. And Dalton threw deep to A.J. Green, and I'm going to continue to be critical of Ryan Clark. Ike Taylor had coverage front. He was a little beat on a long crossing pattern. He was a little behind the play. Ryan Clark was behind the play, but to me, it just never looked like he broke on the ball. Green showed really what a good player he is in this game, and Dalton certainly in the first half looked early in the game, looked good, and bang, the Bengals are right in it. They get it down to the 5-yard line, and then the rest of the game starts breaking the Steelers' way, and I will just point out, before I let you jump in here, is the Bengals got down to the Steeler 4-yard line, and they ran a pass to AJ Green, and it was covered by Taylor, and then they had a 3rd-and-4, and they came out with a different kind of set with some receivers wide left, and they set up Jermaine Gresham out to the right, and Troy went out to cover him man on man, and I'm telling you, I am screaming as loud as I can. Timeout, got to do something. This is the worst matchup in history as Troy tried to cover him from the 4, and they ran an easy slant for a touchdown. Fortunately, they call A.J. Green for a false start on the other side of the action, and then, as I said, it all started to go our way.
Yeah, back to the play on the deep pass from Dalton there to A.J. Green. Great play design, and Ryan Clark never – he bit on something there, and he did not have the help over top for Taylor there. As you mentioned, Taylor was trailing behind. I think Ike got a little tied up with what he saw as well too, maybe staring into the backfield there a little bit. AJ Green, we've talked about this. This kid's going to be good. Dalton's going to be.
He is good.
And this is going to be matchups to watch for years to come, not only with Ike Taylor, but after he moves on, you know, Curtis Brown or Cortez Allen in this area. So a great play design, great execution, and they hit it. And as you said, you know, Ryan Clark at times this year has not had sufficient help over the top and some recognition being out of place at times, and we saw it there. So great play by them, and as you mentioned, the short pass to Gresham for a touchdown. That was just a mismatch of all mismatch right there. You've got to press that guy hard. Gresham, you know, he's not the best tight end in the league, but he's definitely in the top six or seven and able to get off the line, especially on a quick slant against a size differential with Troy Polamalu there. So thank God it was a false start there. And boy, the Bengals after that, they're, you know, it's funny how a couple of plays can really change the complexion of the game. That false start there, and then they false started on their first field goal formation.
Delay of game.
Oh yeah, delay of game. I'm sorry. And then backed them up, and then you saw Ziggy Hood help bust through his middle along with Cameron Hayward, get that big arm of his up and block the field goal. And boy, what a momentum shift to the game that was. You could just feel, and you were at the game. Could you feel it in the stadium? Just a shift right there.
Well, it was a big sigh of relief. I mean, the Bengals had gone right down the field. Coming out of the Kansas City game, you know, you got a crowd that's a little bit nervous. So, you know, I turned to my brother and said, well, you know, they took 7 points off the board for a touchdown. They just took points off the board for this field goal, and it's still about a 95% chance that they're going to make it, but they still got to kick it. And lo and behold, you get the block by Hayward and the good penetration by Hood. I'll tell you, from where I saw it originally, it wasn't clear to me that William Gay didn't make the play coming around the edge, because he was pretty close as well. We heard from the press conference today, one of the guys in the media said that there had only been 3 field goals blocked all year. I don't know if that's correct. That seems a little low to me, particularly on some of the longer ones. I know I've seen a couple blocked, but But yeah, that's a huge win, a field goal of, you know, 32 yards or whatever it was exactly. And then the Steelers get the ball again, and we see them finally get a first down on Mendenhall going over the right side, and you find that you know, that maybe they're going to be able to run the ball. But again, a couple passes not caught, a deep shot at Mike Wallace, and then missing Antonio Brown over the middle, where basically again, and this is what bothered me here when we're at the kind of the 8 minute mark of the first quarter, on the third down play that they end up turning the ball over eventually, Brown, Sanders, and whoever the third receiver was on that side at the time, I don't know if it was Kotcher or somebody else, but they all got caught in the same place, and Brown ended up falling down. Sanders couldn't get dislodged from his defender, and Ben had to just throw the ball, really throwing it away, I think, on that play. So, you know, you have the Steelers. So in that sense, I don't feel like the momentum impacted the team all that much right at that point. And you have two plays now where you have, you know, drops, potentially drops, and you have poor play design is really what I thought. And I don't know if that was guys running the wrong routes or whatever, but I do know that the people I was sitting with, there was a lot of anxiety coming off the second half of Kansas City and then seeing the Steelers essentially go three and out, going three and out in the first drive and only getting first down on the second drive and only out to the 30-yard line. There's still a fair bit of anxiety in the stands.
And with good reason, too. You have two series like that include. I'm going to call the Wallace one a drop. I mean, it was a great hit, I admit. But, you know, he had that thing in his hands. You got to bring that thing down.
Did you ever think it was potentially a fumble?
You know, the guys on TV, I think, did too. And you know, they say, who knows nowadays, Dave, what the rule of a catch is and what a damn touchdown is. You know,
a football move.
And that was very close to being just that. But I don't think he fully had possession of it to make a football move. I thought it was a great hit. But that's a ball he's got to hold on to. And then, you know, as you mentioned, that pass by Ben to no man's land there, somebody wasn't in the right place there. And, you know, you've got a bunch of young guys out there. And once again, Antonio Brown's in the middle of it. It just makes you kind of wonder sometimes, you know, who the culprit is there. And, we might never know that. But two series, and then you're punting again with 7:45 left in the first quarter, but you know, thank God for the special teams play. Curtis Brown, right from the get-go, was making plays on special teams. They had the illegal block in the back there that kind of you know, put them back in a hole at their own 32-yard line. And then you know, then the Steelers defense just really kind of tightened the screws.
Yeah, they did tighten the screws after a little bit of movement. The Bengals converted a third down, a third and six to Hawkins. Timmons made the tackle, but on that play, Andy Dalton had his choice of about five receivers all running open. And then Benson goes off right tackle the next play for 14 yards there and steal the territory. And this is really where it really did start to go bad for the Bengals, because you talked about the penalty on the punt return. And I had said that was a 17-yard return that was wiped out, moved them all the way. It was effectively moved them back 15 or 16 yards. And you know, I said to my brother watching the game, and I'm not sure there are penalties that are more debilitating than a team that has a good return that's called all the way back from the beginning of the return, where, you know, you feel like you're getting great field position, 30 or 40 yards upfield, and then you're going to instead start 10 to 15 yards back from where they caught the ball. And that's what happened there. But they did move the ball in the Steelers territory just outside of field goal range. And then we saw the penalty on Cook for the holding call, and from there the Steelers defense really stiffened, and then the offense finally got it going.
Yeah, but what about the second down and 20 play there from Dalton to Gresham? You know, Polamalu came up behind, you know, and was
Great stop.
Yeah,
great stop.
Kung fu fighting, you know.
Yeah, that was you know, love to see more of that from Troy. He did, and, you know, whoever was behind him, I don't know if it was Clark then, the Steelers almost picked that ball off. But, yeah, you're right. That was an excellent play by Troy.
Yeah, and then, you know, they have to punt there after, you know, and they shot themselves in the foot, like you said, with a holding penalty and the block, illegal block above the waist to start with there. Then the Steelers took over, and we started to see the kind of the fruits of the labor of the the counter lead that they call it, where Ligurski will pull out to the right hand side. Sometimes, you know, they run a lot of different things with this counter lead. Sometimes it depends on if David Johnson's lined up as a fullback, or sometimes you'll have Heath Miller as an H back to a side, and then kind of lead Mendenhall or Redmond through the hole behind Ligurski pulling. But boy, Ligurski really, really imposed his will on that play. It was the bread and butter for the Steelers all afternoon from pretty much that point on, and it even set up, you know, a couple of touchdowns on the pass later on in the game, which we'll get to here. But and then you had that pass to Antonio Brown, really made up for it, took it 45 yards on down. And let's not forget,
David, I'm not sure who's more dangerous right now. I don't know that there's Antonio Brown's starting to feel like Devin Hester to me. When he has the ball, it's just crazy stuff, and he made a really nice catch there. And as you said, away he goes.
Yeah, you've got to, and it's the whole thing about pick. I said before the game on Twitter, based on the Bengals' injuries, with Nate Clements out there, they're banged up back there. They had that Brandon Gee guy and Chris Crocker, I think, having to play some nickel in there, and that's just a mismatch in there. And you've got to get the ball in these young. If they choose to double Mike Wallace, like these teams have been doing, you've got to make him pay with Brown, and he's just a guy. If you get the ball in his hands in the open field, he can, make things happen, and he did with another 45 yards there. Let's not forget to praise Wesley Saunders, two plays before that. Ben's starting to show a lot more confidence, I think, in this young tight end, with good reason, too. He seems to get more and more comfortable every week. He just ran away from Lawson there on that play. It wasn't even close. Mismatch of epic proportions. Kind of an out route there to Saunders for 14 yards on a first down. They come back and try to run the ball again, and then second and nine, they hit Brown for that big gainer, and that was the end of the quarter. And then they moved into the second quarter, start right up. There another play they're running outside of that counter lead was at 14 straight, that they call it, really just right up the gut there. And you saw Redmond, go for 9 yards and then 1 yard and then 2 yards when they're down deep in the Bengals territory there. Then you have Essex report, as eligible in there. And Rashard Mendenhall takes it right guard for 3 yards behind. Great blocking there. That was another one of those, I believe, counter leads right there on that play, with David Johnson leading the way through the hole behind Ligurski. I didn't catch it until the next time through the tape there. Marcus Gilbert really turning his man. I think Geno Atkins out on that play as well. So, really imposed the running game well, and hats off to Doug Ligurski. And you turn around, the Steelers 7-0 lead.
Yeah, and the Steelers defense, got it together here. They forced the Bengals a 3-and-out, and the key play was they got some good pressure on Andy Dalton on third down. He had a scramble, and it looked like he might be able to go for 8 or 10 yards on 3rd and 10, and Ziggy Hood made a real nice shoestring tackle on him, and they punted, and then, you get the defensive pass interference on a long pass to Wallace. It's a 45-yard penalty. I saw something written this week about this. I think it was by Bill Barnwell on the Grantland site, talking about the pass interference call. And obviously there are different rules in college for pass interference. The NFL's probably going to change this penalty. You hate to make it too much of a judgment call, but this was a call that, it's clear there was contact. It's clear the defensive back impeded Wallace. I'm not sure Wallace makes the catch either way. A 45-yard penalty, definitely the fine does not, the punishment does not fit the crime. And it's a heavy fine for the Bengals to play there on a 45-yard penalty. But we've seen it go against us plenty in our day. Took it, and Mendenhall gets it 3 straight times. The first one, a 15-yard carry off right guard, was a really good run. And then the touchdown run, another good job, this time picking his hole on a sweep right where he looks like he's not going to be able to turn the corner, and then he cuts it back upfield. The Bengals over pursue, and it's 14-0. And then, they fumble the kickoff, and, boy, it is lights out from there.
Yeah, that Mendenhall run, 38 toss crack. Another thing we need to point out there, Antonio Brown is the guy cracking on that. And he does have a nice crack, although the guy, I forget who penetrated there. The guy that penetrated kind of impeded Marquise Pouncey and I think Ramon Foster from getting out in front of that. You know, Mendenhall is supposed to have a convoy out front of that, and they got kind of caught up in a little bit of the crack back wash there on Brown. Props to Brown for making that block, though. I have been on him in my blocking reports, breakdowns about him needing to improve his blocking. He has done that over the last few weeks, so make sure we give props there. Mendenhall just did a great job of waiting for things to kind of develop and cutting back on that. Finally, I think Foster caught up there. I think Max Starks comes across there and lays a good block, and he goes into the end zone. Back to the pass interference call on Crocker. That could have been called either way. In fact, I think that's a design play call for the Ravens. Defensive pass interference there. But, yeah, Wallace was kind of hooked on the play. I'm going to disagree. I think Wallace gets to that ball. Ben really had it laid out there for him. I think that's an easy six there. Maybe you could call, and you're right, there may be some rule changes here. If it's not a legitimate, you know, if it's more of a I guess they're going to have to classify different cases of pass interference. Maybe something like college does 15 yards from the spot of the original spot, unless it's a flagrant, you know, interference where you know for a fact the guy was going impeding with the actual catch. I don't know. We'll have to see what the competition committee goes forward on this. But that could have been called either way. But, you know, normally the Steelers haven't gotten that type of call. So it was good to see them get in, and it was even better to see them capitalize on it in the red zone.
Yeah, and then – you know, the key to this game, if you're going to – clearly the Steelers played well in virtually every facet of the game, but no question this is the best. I've talked about it a couple times. You've talked about it a couple times. Special teams has been really good this year. It wasn't great against Kansas City, and Mike Tomlin made a point of pointing that out in the press conference after the Kansas City game. But we saw it here in this game, and we got the blocked field goal early. And we all know what happened later with Brown returning the punt for a touchdown. We saw some big tackles by Curtis Brown. And then on this ensuing kickoff after it's 14-0, Stevenson Sylvester forces a fumble, and Manny Sanders is there to get it. And the Steelers didn't waste any time. A nice run by Will Redmond gets a couple yards, and Antonio Brown takes it around then for a first down. And then Ben hits Wallace for a touchdown, and you got to know that made Mike Wallace feel good, not having his greatest six quarters. Watching that play, I'm standing there, and it just seemed to me like it took forever for Ben to see the throw and get it there, but he did, and he got it there in plenty of time, and Wallace kept his feet in bounds, 21-0, and it was time to have a party.
Yeah, a couple of things going back over those couple of plays there. The Antonio Brown right in. What did you see that? That's 2 weeks in a row Ben has put somebody on his ass there. You don't want to get in the habit of your quarterback having to make some blocks, but a good one by Ben on that end around there. On the pass to Mike Wallace, this is the fruit of the labors of having that good counter lead game going. You had the fake counter lead on this. Everybody and their brother bid on it. Roethlisberger just has to wait, for Wallace to make the second move and head towards the back corner of the end zone. It might have seemed like it took a little bit longer than it should, but I think that's the way that play is designed. That all resulted in the great play of Doug Legursky, if you ask me, and great timing for Bruce Arians to go away and use that fake counter lead there.
Yeah. Yeah, really good stuff, and I'm totally with you on Legursky and the play design and all of that stuff. We've seen this happen a couple times, and we've seen it happen more than a couple times, and it's, you know, always the concern. Look, it's 21-0, the game you hope is for all intents and purposes over, but there's too much time left to be salting this thing away. And give the Bengals credit, they took it right down the field, and this is where Andy Dalton looked really good. And A.J. Green looked really good. And I have to say, again, credit to the Bengals on this. I'm not going to rip the Steeler defense for giving up yards and a touchdown here on this drive. What I do find a little bit annoying when you're watching this drive unfold is you just see how good Green is. I'm fine having Ike Taylor on him. I just wish they would give him a little help every once in a while. He doesn't have to be on an island by himself all the time. And he was over there. He slipped on one ball on a nice cut by Green. And then the touchdown, Dalton did a great job of just keeping a play alive and rolling to his left. And I was watching Taylor the whole play, and he ran with him for 4 seconds, and they're down in the back of the end zone, crossing left to right in front of the goalpost. And basically Green stops and goes back 3 steps the other direction. Well, it doesn't matter who you are. You're not going to be able to stay with a guy that long. And he didn't have any deep safety help back there. And I felt a little bit bad for Ike there. He's getting tooled a little on that drive. And again, it's much to Green's credit and Dalton's credit. But I thought maybe they should have. I just don't think you can give him a little help when you can see who the Bengals' big and maybe only target is.
On the touchdown, didn't Ike Taylor get his feet kind of tangled up, though, with Green coming out? Because I think that's where his initial – I don't think he ever recovered from that, getting kind of tailing Green there. I thought I saw the feet get tangled there. And Troy guessed and was taken off towards the left corner of the end zone, I believe. I forget who was out there that he was going to help. But yeah, I mean, Dalton did a great job of keeping the play alive. And, the longer we've seen it on our side of the offense, too. You give Ben enough time, and any good quarterback, back there for that matter, a guy's going to get open after three, four, four and a half seconds there. And that's what kind of happened there. I did have a few problems on that drive. But as we, I don't want to take punish Ike as much as I want to give credit to AJ Green and, yep. and Gresham as well too, man. What a great set of weapons! And we have not heard the rest, of these guys and the Bengals going forward. Now I definitely hope the Bengals do not make the playoffs, just because I just don't want the Bengals to make the playoffs. I think they could be. You never know when you face a team three times in a season. We've seen that ourselves with us and the Ravens. So, that was a great drive, and it just shows how good they were to answer back from a touchdown 21-0 lead that the Steelers had. They just didn't fold up and die.
So, Dave, if I'm going to get on my soapbox, now's the time I'm going to get on my soapbox and give you my rant for the game yesterday. This is the thing that killed me. And this is on Ben, and this is on Tomlin. I just don't understand the Steelers' use of the clock. I just really, really don't get it. They get this next drive after the touchdown. They start on the 20. By the way, for anybody who didn't see the game, Manny Sanders is returning kicks again this week. He only had to do it twice. This was in the opening kickoff. He took it back 16 yards, I think, on the return. The Steelers were around the 20 maybe. And then on this one, he lost his footing a little bit on his initial step about 3 yards deep in the end zone. At that point, he probably made the right choice to kneel down and take the touchback. So the Steelers start on the 20 with 4:06 left to go. Ben gets sacked, and they don't get organized, and Ben has to call timeout here with 3:39 left. I don't really have a problem with that timeout. I'm not sure in that scenario exactly why that happened. It's clear that Ben didn't get the guys to the line and the play clock was running down. And then they get the first down to Hines Ward, or excuse me, they get a 12-yard gain to Hines Ward, and it's third down, and he throws a pass to Manny Sanders to get the first down. And now you're thinking, okay, this is a great situation. 2:28 left, you got a first down. Let's manage this clock so no matter what happens, let's not let the Bengals get the ball back. And again, on first down, he gets sacked. And this is what I didn't understand. So we're just running down to the 2-minute warning. There's no doubt they can hit the 2-minute warning without taking a penalty. And they kind of rush the play a little bit, and Ben makes a terrible pass to Mowaldi Moore coming out of the backfield that he has no chance of catching, and he's covered. And I just didn't get it. And now they're in a terrible situation, 3rd and 18. With 2:05, they're third and 18 with 2:05 left, and they got to run a play. And the clock's going to stop on the 2-minute warning. The Bengals are going to get the ball with good field position. So I didn't get it. It's even worse on the Bengals' possession in my mind about how the Steelers the possession at the end of the half. But I don't understand that. We saw this in the Kansas City game. We've seen it in the Baltimore game. We've just seen it so many times this year. The Steelers don't seem to know what they're doing in terms of clock management in the last 3 minutes of halves.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see that. I mean, I tell you what I did like, though. I did like the draw play there on 3rd and 23 to Moore. I mean, he got 13 yards. You're going to run off some of the clock. I mean, there's not many plays in the playbook for third and 23, and you definitely want to make sure at least the clock runs down.
Well, it was a 2:05. I don't, you know, pretty much any play you run there is going to run 5 seconds.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but you're deep in your own end there. If you throw the ball, you risk the interception and setting them up right in there, you know, in their own end on a third and 23 if you're throwing for the sticks. I mean, if it's a much shorter pass or shorter conversion to make there, well, then, yeah. So I wasn't that upset with the clock management there. You know, I thought it was just a sign of them continuing to put their foot on the gas and you know, all of it was out of shotgun. I think they were trying to score, and I just don't think they executed well there. You know, after they punted and the defense came back on, I guess you could say, well, you know, maybe some timeouts there or something, but luckily they went incomplete first two passes, so they're stopping the clock for you, and then, you know, you get with the false start there.
Oh, yeah, no problem with what Cincinnati did. Three incompletions taking a total of 15 seconds. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I guess you end up having to look at the end result, and the end result was being they having to punt, and Antonio Brown takes it up the right side for 60 yards and a touchdown, which I must say Bryant McFadden, hat tip to you, my friend. You made he blocked three people with one block, and he knew immediately after he made that block, his hand went up that Antonio Brown was gone. So once again, special teams, another splash play, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, and that really had to deflate the Bengals, who were looking at you know, they were 21-7 at that point and thinking, okay, well, maybe we can regroup, come out of here. We're getting the ball first in the second half. You know, we're still in this game, but when they gave up that long touchdown right there, it was toast. Now, if you want to get into a little bit of clock management issues, the Steelers kick back off to them, and then Dalton is sacked on first and 10 with I think that play started, what, about 1:12 left in the
end. No. Yeah, on the after the kickoff, yeah, so 1:12, yeah. And this is what blows my mind, and this is really where the Steelers did this last week against Kansas City. I do not get it. You're willing to let Baltimore take a shot to beat you because you have so much confidence in your defense, and that's to win the game. You have the Bengals deep in their own territory, their rookie quarterback. They're reeling from just getting their, you know, four touchdowns scored on them in the quarter, and you sack Andy Dalton on first down, and you have two timeouts, and you don't do anything? That's crazy.
Yeah, now that's I could definitely see where people would have problems with that, most definitely, because, you know, you just got through returning a punt, too, for a touchdown. So
yeah, give your return guy another shot.
Exactly. So, I mean, I'm with you on that. I can see why, you know, they were just okay with letting them run out the clock at that point, knowing good and well they were going to have to kick the ball back off to the Bengals to start the second half.
I don't get it. The other thing is I don't get it after – okay, they didn't do it after first down. I don't get it after second down when now it's going to be third and 15 with 30 seconds left or 28 seconds left. Just make them run a play. If they're going to throw it, maybe you get the interception, or you can guarantee they get a punt to Antonio Brown. And if they try to punt it away from them, maybe they kick it out of bounds at the 40-yard line and you get to throw it once in the end zone. There are lots of things you can do. It makes no sense to me the way Tomlin does these things at the end of the half. You know, he's got a chance to get – He continues to profess having so much confidence in his defense with 32 seconds left and Cincinnati on their own 16-yard line. Nothing bad is going to happen. Nothing bad is going to happen. I mean, it's just not.
Yeah, and you've got it right. In fact, I thought of you right when this was going down, thinking David's going to have you know going to want to go off on this. And yeah, I mean, I agree, David. I'm with you on this. Especially coming off the heels of Antonio Brown and the way the special teams units has played, why wouldn't you give yourself a chance to put up three or six or seven more points right before the half there? And God knows if they try to pass on third down and you just tee off on them, send the kitchen sink, you never know, sack, fumble into the end zone or whatnot. So, yeah, we've seen at times, we've talked about this recently too, how Mike Tomlin sometimes seems to become a spectator, you know, a fan. Caught up kind of in the game. Now, by no means am I saying run Tomlin out of town, fire Mike Tomlin. Hell no, but he's got to do a better job at the end of halves managing the clock, you know, in these type of situations.
Yep. Well, Dave, we spent a lot of time rolling through the first half, and that's where all the action was. Just kind of some of the highlights in the second half. And I wanted to say on that last drive, we saw a really nice play by Curtis Brown on the tackle and that punt. He had two of those. You pointed out Brian McFadden. It just, you know, the special teams play was really, really exceptionally good. Great, two great punts by Kapanos. Obviously, Sushi missed a very long field goal, a 50-yarder, with when the Steelers had 10 guys on the field. And Tomlin had a biting but funny remark about Kapanos punting the ball very, very well. But it would be helpful if he made sure 11 guys were on the field before they kicked those field goals. And I imagine that point was well sent. I was screaming the same thing. Just count to nine in front of you. That's your first job when you get out in the field. So I was a little surprised that he didn't get that right. But, you know, good stuff all around. Mike Wallace gets another touchdown on a really nifty run on a, you know, semi-bubble screen type ball. And we saw Isaac Redman and Rashard Mendenhall run the ball effectively. I mean, you know, anything jump out at you in terms of the second half that, you know, this is pretty much the seven-minute drive in the third quarter pretty much put it on ice.
Yeah, just more of the fact that they stayed pretty balanced. They stayed fairly committed to the same kind of game plan that they used in the first half there. And the offensive line really started blocking downhill at that point, I thought. I mean, Mendenhall really was hitting the hole hard. Isaac Redman continues to run, you know, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, violent. One of those plays, I forget which one it was, where Redman spins off of the butt, you know, looks like he's not going to make it through the hole. Max Starks on the other side, if you look at that play, he holds that block long, way away from the play, and that enabled Redman to kind of roll off sort of Mendenhall-esque, if you will, off that for a big gain. And let me tell you, if Antonio Brown holds a block downfield there, Redman gains another 20 yards, you know, on that run alone. So I think that ended up anyway resulting in a I think that drive ended up resulting in a touchdown, as you mentioned, to that bubble pass to Mike Wallace. And once again, we see the bubble screen, the effectiveness for it. Is it going to go for 9 yards every time? Absolutely not. But you're setting up so much stuff for future down the line when you do that type plays, and it only makes sense to get the ball in your playmaker's hands. And Wallace certainly did do that. A nice run after the catch. I thought that was a highlight. You mentioned the missed field goal later in the game as well. And you're right. Kapanos has got to make sure he's got the people on the field. Let me ask you this. How much do you think that bothered to see David Johnson kind of, when you go back and watch the replay, you see David Johnson kind of run out of nowhere, you know, right as the ball snapped. How much do you think that bothered Sushi on that?
You know, it's a great question. I didn't even think to ask it. I have no idea. I'm pretty sure that, you know, in his field of vision, just thinking about it, you'd think there's a chance that it wasn't in his field of vision, but you see a guy running in there because he's generally looking that direction, and it's pretty funny to watch David Johnson. He runs out about 7 yards. He just stops because the ball's been snapped and flags are flying and all hell's breaking loose, and the only thing I was thinking is possibly they would call an illegal procedure penalty and have them replay the down without the field goal attempt counting, but that wasn't to be, and obviously the Bengals declined, but yeah, it's a very good question. And, you know, you just see snappers do that every time out. It was just surprising. And I'm sure both Kapanos and David Johnson are getting hell for that today. Dave, the other thing is James Harrison with a really big second half.
Oh, yeah, that guy came unglued. And, you know, in that first game that they played him, I thought James really, really played well. Whitworth just did a good job on him. But on the flip side, and my Homer glasses are off here, Whitworth got away with a few holds on there, some few hogtides on that. Brett Kiesel really had a good game, and it really helped allow them to do some stunts and all to get Harrison free. And he just, he railroaded Dalton on a few of those, and I think the offensive line kind of you know, knew the situation at that time, kind of took their foot off the gas at that time. It was just easy pickings for Harrison, and I kind of mentioned in my pregame seven things, you know, that the Steelers had to get some sacks in this game, they had to, you know, get some pickoffs in this game. One thing I meant to mention as well in my pregame notes, I said I wondered if we see some sort of some more dime that we hadn't seen in a couple of weeks from Dick LeBeau, because surely he's going to show Dalton something a little bit different. And we did see this, and it kind of ties into what you said about Ryan Clark here. We saw Ryan Clark come off the field in sort of these nickel situations. Ryan Clark come off the field and was replaced by an extra DB in Cortez Allen. Now, of course, Cortez Allen was not playing, you know, a deep safety. They're pretty much kind of a press man, if you will. I think on a few of those plays, I'm not sure. I can't remember if a few of them might have been zone. I got to go back and watch that. But, you know, we did see Ryan Clark for the first time come off the field in some obvious passing situations. So that might be something to look for going forward with having Troy as a deep safety in these situations. This only happened on 6 non-penalty plays that my guys charted them on. So that's one thing that we saw a whole different wrinkle from in the past, because normally if we're playing this dime, we're either playing a big nickel type dime where Ryan Mundy comes on the field, or we're playing a traditional nickel where one of the linebackers comes off the field and Cortez Allen comes on. So that's one thing that stuck out as well.
I loved it, and there was a little bit of that in the presser when they were asking about Curtis Brown and Cortez Allen. Tomlin had, I wouldn't say effusive praise for the two of them, but certainly had some kind words to say. And then the follow-up was, are we going to see them some more of them in the sub-packages? And Tomlin, with a slight grin, said, let's wait and see. And I think the answer is a lot like Antonio Brown and Emmanuel Sanders last year when we got into the last quarter of the season, the last 4 or 5 weeks, the playoffs, we started to see more, particularly of Manny Sanders. And we've seen Cortez Allen on the field. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point we see Curtis Brown on the field. And, you know, we're obviously not going to see Bryant McFadden on the field anymore. And Keenan Lewis has done a decent job in there playing some of the dime stuff. But we may see these guys get some snaps. And I'm all for taking Ryan Clark out of there on these obvious passing downs, third and long. I like having more corners back there, even if you're going to play zone type of stuff. And as you pointed out with Troy and even Mundy, you know, I'm just down on the Steelers safety's ability to cover receivers. So, yeah, that's a very good point, and that's something else that we saw in the game. How about
let me add this. I don't want to totally get out of here with totally bashing Clark. Clark has been good coming up and offering good run support as of late. In fact, I think he even led in tackles, led the team in tackles yesterday in that game. He has been awesome coming up and put some smacks on some people in run support. So
yep, no question. And I think we've said that all year. I you know, Troy is better you know, up along around the line. And, yeah, Clark did some good things, and he's obviously a big hitter, and that's and you're right to point that out. Dave, the other thing is we saw Ramon Foster go off. You mentioned a little bit. They talked about did you think at all about moving Ligurski over from his guard spot and bringing Kimo Watu in to play the right guard spot when Foster went down? And Tomlin said we didn't want to fix anything that wasn't broken. Trey Essex is a useful backup. He gets snaps there, so we went that way. That surprised you at all? Because I actually would have assumed that maybe they would have made that move, particularly with Kimo Watu playing most of the game last week.
Well, the first thing that ran through my head was, okay, here comes Kimo Watu into left guard, and they're going to flip Ligurski over to right guard. But let's be honest, Ligurski is a better left guard than he is a right guard, and he's a better left guard than he is a center. If I had to rank his specialty, I would go left guard, center, right guard as far as his usefulness. And Tomlin hit it on the head. Ligurski had a great game at left guard. He wasn't broke, so they didn't fix him. They evidently had been working Essex during the week a lot at right guard, so that's the way that he went. Is that something I would want long term? Absolutely not. I think we can get by with it against the Browns here, but it was a minor surprise. I mean, let's face it, Kimo Watu's strengths is in a run game, especially the counter type plays. Anything that involves pass protection, you're flipping a coin on. So it was good to give Essex some work there. It'll be interesting. I think he will be your guy against the Browns. If Foster does not go, I would expect them to keep Ligurski there at left guard.
And then the other thing, Dave, is I think it's certainly not to the point of being embarrassing, and I think they did a decent job of running the plays at the right time. But it is obviously apparent, and it even seemed to me after an extended conversation between Ben and Tomlin on the sideline that the Steelers are going to try as hard as they possibly can to get Hines Ward his 1,000 catches this year in these next 4 weeks. And he got 5 yesterday. He was a leading he got more catches than anybody, and he's getting balls thrown to him that are pretty much 100% kind of catches. He did a lot of bubble screens. He got one slant there in the second half that went for a nice gain, but basically all really short stuff. Tomlin said it's not about that. He said, well, I know it's important to him, but we're going to run our offense, and if everybody does their jobs, those opportunities are going to present themselves. Tomlin's smoking it. That's a bunch of BS. He definitely is trying to get him there, and I think he's probably trying to get him there by the Christmas Eve game in St. Louis so they don't have to worry about it the last week of the season.
Yeah, they're trying to get him involved here. I mean, let's face it, Hines did have another great catch in that game. Ben just missed him on one of those out routes there in the second half there, where Hines had his man beat. If Ben drops that thing in there, it's another 25 yards.
Yeah, that was right. That was Ben keeping a play alive for 7 or 8 yards. And the thing is, I turned to my brother and said, you know, the other three guys catch that. You know, it's just Hines is not. I mean, it would have been a great catch, but. You know, you could see the speed differential, even though Hines did beat his guy on kind of a busted play. I think Ben was thinking he's throwing to the younger guy.
Yeah, I thought the same thing, too. I'm thinking, well, if that was one of the other two guys, Ben's so used to throwing it out there for him like that. Yeah, let's face it, Dave, they're going to get him his numbers. He got his yardage yesterday. That's good to see. He's a handful short, but, you know, they go into this game with Cleveland. I think the line originally opened 15.5 points in this one. We mentioned how nice it would be to get some of these guys in the game. I would love to see Curtis Brown get his first defensive snaps of the season in this game if they take care of business early. And it would not surprise me to see 3 or 4 or 5 balls forced over to Hines Ward in this game as well, too. Call it what you will. Is it forcing it if the guy is catching it, making plays with it?
What I think is...
I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, the guy's still making plays, David.
Well, I don't know. You're running bubble screens for them that are probably better suited for some different guys to have the ball in their hands. Now, is it a disaster? No, it's not a disaster. Absolutely not. And I kind of agree with what Ed Bouchette wrote in his column this morning on PG Plus. He said, you know, it's clear that they're trying to get him the ball. Why didn't they throw it to him 5 more times in the second half and get him 8, 9 catches so that it becomes pretty much a moot point? He can get, you know, 2 catches a game the rest of the way, and he's going to get it. So I thought that was a pretty good point because – he's making plays, but those are plays any of the other 4 receivers would make for the Steelers as well, and they're probably better suited to it, as we saw with Mike Wallace breaking that TD. What a great run that was, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't force it in the second half because they didn't want us talking about it
any more than this.
They didn't want us looking and saying, boy, he sure did force the ball to Hines Ward in the second half. Hey, he's damned if he's due and he's damned if he don't.
Yeah, no, look, I said I'm all for it. I'm not opposed to it. I just, you know, and I don't expect him to admit it, so we'll admit it for him.
Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen if they don't throw it to him at all? Cleveland, you know.
Oh, all hell's gonna break.
Oh, well, then Hines is already, he's done and all like that. I mean, we know what it is. It is what it is. And as long as he's making plays, it's not changing the rhythm or the complexion of the game. Hey, I'm fine with it. But yeah, you're right. You know, Tomlin's not going to come out and say, hey, well, look, we need to force about 5 or 6 balls a game. Good stuff.
Yeah, well, look, it was A-plus for the special teams, a very good effort from Ben, just a really solid game, good decision-making. Again, the Steelers win the turnover battle 2-0. You know, good work by both the offense and defense, really good pressure in the second half. The Bengals put together one drive. That's going to happen. Good job by Andy Dalton and A.J. Green on that drive. But really nice job, I imagine, by the offensive line. We'll get your grades up on Steeler Depot a little later in the week, and we'll see how those guys graded out. But the Steelers ran the ball effectively against the number 3 run defense in the NFL. A lot of the pundits said they wouldn't do that. And, Dave, just like we were killing a lot of the media for getting too down on the Steelers last week. You know, look, they didn't play a perfect game. They beat the crap out of the Bengals on the scoreboard. They didn't play a perfect game. They can do some things better. And that's really, to me, the intriguing and enticing thing about this team is they still haven't played their best football. There's room for improvement pretty much across the board. And that's why, you know, I go see the Packers give up 32 points yesterday or however 35, however many they gave up. The Steelers have just as good a chance to be in the Super Bowl out of the AFC as anybody else. And once you get there, we all know pretty much anything can happen with this group of guys.
Yeah, I think the AFC is wide open. We saw yesterday that Green Bay can – they bleed. And if something bleeds, you know, you can kill it. And we saw that yesterday. The Giants just you know, they left too much time. We saw how dangerous Rodgers can be. I said in that last podcast, you don't want to look too far down the line and start talking Packers, Steelers Super Bowl. But if we get there, some things have got to change on defense, and it's not going to be zone coverage. It's going to have to be good man-to-man type stuff, you know, some dime situation type stuff, and you're really going to have to put pressure on Aaron Rodgers. It was good to see the pressure yesterday. It still could be a little bit better, but it was a lot better yesterday than what it's been. Ziggy Hood still needs to play a little bit better, in my opinion. Great game by Casey Hampton. I thought poor Big Snack was going to get him one yesterday. Dalton kind of shimmied out way of that. Brett Kiesel, good pressure. We talked about Harrison. My biggest concern right now is, God damn it, get Lamar Woodley healthy, man. Leave him the hell out of these damn games, and let's get him back to 100%. You know, for the playoffs, because I think we can both agree the Steelers are going to be in this tournament. And, you know, if they don't have, you know, Jason Worlds has made a lot of good progress this year. I'm real proud of him, but he still needs a little bit more seasoning, as Mike Tomlin said, check back with him at the end of the season on him. So we need Woodley going forward, and I sure as hell hope they hold him out of this Browns game.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Yeah, that's all good points. Jason Worlds, and I'll tell you, if you're a Steeler fan, the other thing as we wrap things up here that you really have to feel good about is you look at the guys on defense, and we see Cortez Allen, and we hear about Curtis Brown, we hear about those guys making progress. You see Jason Worlds do some good stuff, and you see Hayward and Ziggy Hood, and you look at the offensive side of the ball, and the group of three young receivers, second and third year guys. Wes Saunders coming along nicely, who looks like he will eventually be the heir apparent to Heath Miller, and I'm certainly not writing Heath Miller off anytime soon. We see Gilbert and Pouncey in the line. Ben's playing good football. This is a team that is going to be around, and they continue to supplement these guys. They're going to have some cash coming off the books this year. Interesting to see. We get the game Thursday night. The Steelers, as you pointed out, they may clinch their playoff berth, but this team's going to be in the playoffs. And the reality is, if you're a Steeler fan, obviously, you know, you want to see them go 4-0 here, but you really want to keep one eye on the Ravens, because the Ravens have to lose a game. And look, this is a team that lost to Seattle and Jacksonville on the road, so to just carte blanche say they're going to go 4-0 isn't right. They're going to be at Cincinnati, and they're going to be at San Diego. And, boy, Dave, do you feel bad for the Monday night guys? They got San Diego, Jacksonville tonight, and they got St. Louis, Seattle next week. Ouch.
Man, what a mess. They're going to have to come out with some way to kind of flex some of that stuff, I think. They have been some awful games on Monday Night Football this year. And you know, the way you combat that is just put the Steelers on. So, you know, maybe we'll see the Steelers more on Monday night next year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, great stuff as always.
One final note, Colt McCoy and running back Peyton Hillis suffered injuries for the Browns Sunday. Their status is kind of uncertain right now. McCoy's day-to-day with kind of a sprained right knee. Hillis, who's been banged up all year, is day-to-day with a strained left hip. It does not look like T.J. Ward will be back for him. That's a big missing cog at safety for them, big hitting safety for them. And, you know, they're just a mess over there right now. And they gave up 200-plus yards to Ray Rice yesterday. So there's a quick injury update on the Browns.
And as always, make sure you can get all this information at SteelersDepot.com, the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. Great stuff that Dave's always got up there. Make sure you're checking that out. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Hammer Speaks, and Dave's at Steelers Depot. And you can follow us at Terrible Podcast, or Gmail us, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for all your comments and questions. We got some nice publicity this week. Always nice to get that. Enjoy your Monday night. Penguins, Bruins tonight, Dave. I'll be down there watching Sydney boys try to stop this freight train that is the Boston Bruins. And Dave and I will be back at you, hopefully, with one of the Cleveland beat writers on Wednesday.
Most definitely. We appreciate everybody listening. And go Steelers.
Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast, Season 2, Episode 52, with Dave and Dave.